Yesterday we talked about the sensors, head, heart, and gut, and trying to figure out what that means. NAO, we talked this good. NAO means 9, gram means point. Now, that's, what is this all about? Well, the circle. Not bad for a geologist here. We talked about the three sensors interacting. Are you good?
Oh, yeah. Wow.
Oh, good.
Yeah. We're taking on the heart side, okay. And we have the head.
The head.
And what did we decide about the head center? Good question.
And the planners.
There's a lot of planning that the head does not live in the present time. It really is more concerned with the past and the future and making comparisons.
Yeah.
Okay? That it's really geared more toward analysis and a lot of creativity and putting ideas together and forecasting and reflecting and all those wonderful things that it does. And the heart center does what?
Feeling.
What is that? What's it really used for? What is it really with it?
Art and poetry.
Artistic, it's dealing with the emotional side. So art and poetry, as far as trying to come up with way to express feelings, the head and the heart work together to do that. But what is the heart really concerned with?
Self.
Relationship. How are we getting along with other people? Connection. If this is, it's kind of the glue that holds it all together as people. Now, we talked about your gut as well. What does the gut do? Well, it reacts mostly. It's the expressive side. It's what people see of us. So if you didn't have a gut center and it wasn't active at all, what do you think you'd look like to other people?
I'm an amoeba.
Lazy.
Boring.
Lazy.
Unmotivated. Passive. Sluggish. Mm-hmm. Okay. What happens if you have too much gut energy?
Annoying.
I mean, if it takes over everything.
Yes. Very aggressive.
Obnoxious.
Very
aggressive.
Yeah. Maybe. I think if you have too much good energy, you end up being like a rock and a river. Everything kind of goes around you, and it becomes sort of stuck. Somebody who has so much good energy that they can't move. It's almost like all they do is just exist, but they don't reach out. There's nothing driving them one way or the other. Same thing with the head. What if you have somebody with so much head center, but the others aren't working, but they're not allowing that to happen?
Nothing gets done.
Nothing gets done. A lot of thinking goes on, lots of planning happens, lots of trips are imagined, but basically let's just shift over to channel 12. Yeah. What about the heart? What if you have somebody who has so much feeling, so much interrelationship with other people? What happens if somebody has too much heart over them?
Yeah. Too clingy?
Well, clingy can be very dependent on others, can be very concerned with themselves, to the point where no matter what they do, whatever they seem to be doing, it doesn't seem to have effect. So there can be somebody who's very loud and expressive and very boisterous, and they have all of this feeling that they're going like this with, but if their heart center is overdone, all they're concerned with is getting their own opinion across and not listening to what you have to say. They become self-consumed. So there's the problem is that, well, the good thing is that most of us probably have a dominant center, something that we use most of the time. And it's kind of a first line of defense. Whenever we get into a conflictual situation where we want to, we get into a fight with our spouse or with our friends or with our parents, part of us immediately comes to the defense. Some people may do it through explanation. If you start a fight with me, I may start asking questions. Because I do primarily head center. That's where I am. I'm pretty good at explaining things. But when it comes down to dealing with feelings, it becomes more difficult. Because if I try to explain feelings, I'm already losing the race. Feelings don't have explanations. Feelings are responses to situation. They're responses, and they're honest responses. Sometimes they're not necessarily based on fact, but they're based on what that person perceives. And this is really about perception. How you perceive other people is through the lens of your dominant center. So if you're a gut-oriented person, you might want people to get things done. Yeah.
Are these inherited or are these taught?
I think, you know, there's a real struggle between nurture and nature. How much of this is taught to us and how much of it do we have? And I think if you've had little kids, you can really tell if you've got a gut-centered child. This is a child that doesn't wait for anything. This is a child that by the time, if I set a two-year-old down and they've got a gut center, and I walk over here to make an adjustment, where is that child gone?
Out the door.
Not only is he outside, he's past the wood pile, headed for the creek, because the water's moving and they want to touch it. Okay. In learning styles, how many here are teachers? Anybody doing any teaching? Okay. Or familiar with like kinesthetic and audio and visual perception? Okay. People who learn with their by seeing pictures as opposed to seeing words. Or people who learn by taking things apart and putting them back together. Okay. Gut-centered kids and or people tend to learn more by doing. These are the ones that love shop class because it allows them to manipulate and do spatial orientation. A lot of boys will fall into this category because most males learn by throwing things and they watch things moving through space and they'll bang things together and make sound because there's something about it that makes it real. A lot of males will do this. For the head, the comparisons can be done usually using words because the words translate into pictures. So a lot of people who prefer writing and reading have a real strong head center. People who prefer art and visual, when I'm talking about graphical representation, tend to have a lot of heart. And the way this was explained to me is that the head people tend to have a lot of the initial, like pen and ink drawings, you ever see those, or architectural things are drawn very cleanly, pen and ink, just, you know, black ink on white paper, and they look really good. But when you add the color, suddenly the picture takes on a mood. Okay, so you have expressionist painters. I don't know if you call, was Van Gogh an expressionist?
Yes.
Okay. If you take Van Gogh, you take out a lot of the black lines and you have a lot of color. If you see Van Gogh's swirling skies and his water, I went to the Van Gogh Museum when I was in Amsterdam, just a one-week trip many years ago. And I stood in front of the paintings, and the feeling almost leaps off right into you. It's an amazing effect. Don't care how many Channel 9 specials you see.
Yeah.
PBS is a wonderful thing, but when you stand in front of these and you watch these brush strokes, and you can almost sense him making the things of emotional flavoring, but the colors are vivid and they bounce off. Mm-hmm. As opposed to somebody like Rembrandt, the Dutch masters, who had a lot of sense for detail. And you see a huge painting the size of this wall, and it's a lot of detail on it. You think, my gosh, that brocade on that sleeve looks real. And the closer you get, the more detail you see, everything is so exquisitely drawn perfectly. But there's a sense of this is a photograph, as opposed to Van Gogh, where this is, you know, as opposed to Rodin, which is a sculpture. So you've got very different kinds of art that can be expressed through the different centers. A lot of sculptors have a lot of heart energy, but what they're doing is taking and making it a real physical thing that you can hang on to. You can walk and look at different perspectives. Paintings tend to be fairly flat, but the feelings that come off of those paintings sometimes can be very, very extreme. Have you ever looked at Van Gogh's paintings very long? Ever seen them? And you watch how the sky changes over the course of his painting career, and it becomes more and more turbulent until finally it presses him right down into the ground. It's like his emotions are the sky, and the more turbulent the emotions become, the bigger the skies become, and suddenly the landscape starts to flatten out, and it's almost like he's being squished like the bug. Really interesting. Okay, tonight we got kind of a clear idea of the centers. We talked about the Wizard of Oz last night.
Yeah.
Remember which center had which character?
Head was the scarecrow.
And there's a scarecrow, okay.
And the heart was the Tin Man.
Tin Man, okay.
And the gut was the lion.
And the gut was the lion, okay. Great. Those are the three pieces of who?
Dorothy.
Okay. As those three pieces come together, more of Dorothy seems to come out, more of her strength, more of her thinking. She figures out the wizard. She has this feeling, and then she does something. The way that the energy flows in this system is that normally the head will come up with an idea. Depending on the desire, is it a good idea, is it a bad idea? You weigh the idea inside the heart center. The heart center says, are we on track? Are we off track? And it's finally expressed. The thing is that the heart and the gut are connected all the time. So are the head and the gut, but typically the flow of the power goes this way. The heart and the gut are constantly exchanging information. And people who have, they think, well, I'm mostly head-centered. I just do what I think I ought to do. That still is driven by heart energy. Do you want to do it? Do you feel like you have to do it? What's the depth of the conviction? Okay. Conviction is something in the head. So an example might be, do you know anybody with a phobia? Kind of a fear that they can't explain, like, I'm afraid of flying, or I'm afraid of dogs, I'm afraid of lentil loaf. I had it before, it made me sick, so I eat it again. When we're small, a collie dog, if we're 2 years old, can see it as big as a horse. Now, to adults, it's just a dog, but to a child, this is a thing with teeth and big eyes that wants to come at me with its tongue hanging out. It can scare me. Okay. If I've had several bad occasions with dogs as a child, I might have a fear in here. But that causes an emotional reaction here, which causes me to have a fight or flight response. Either attack that collie or run away from it. So, as an adult, I may walk down the street one day, and this collie starts running at me, or a big dog, a Rottweiler, anything, and I suddenly have a paralysis that sets in, because what's happened is I've activated the memory. That starts this emotional response that starts me to feel sweaty palms and nervousness, and the adrenaline rush starts to happen. What's even more fascinating to me is that you can be sitting in a chair and you can imagine a dog coming at you and still have the emotional response and have that physical somatic reaction. It's a real interesting way to watch the energy because it's happening all the time. Now some people say, well, I've got control of my fear. Well, what does that really mean? It just means that you've somehow been able to discharge the link here a little bit so that you don't have an immediate reaction. But most people, when they develop phobias, have to go through a lot of desensitization to whatever that was. Like, what if you have a fear of flying? What do you have to do?
Fly.
Yeah, but sometimes you'll join a group and go through, okay, we're going to charter an airplane, so all of us are in this together. And I think sometimes people said it's not the fear of flying, it's the fear of being out of control. That you're in this place and you're in a seat and you can't move out of it. And so there's this, it's not just flying, it's any place where you can't just say, stop and let me off. Is that true? All right, think of this circle sort of as the complete human being. All right, this is our representation. These different centers come in different proportions for different people. So like yesterday we talked about identifying your dominant center. Okay, and I'm thinking about, that means if my dominant is head, then the secondary center, maybe I'm up here on the circle. Okay, predominantly head, secondarily gut. I might think about doing something, then act on that thought. But I'm not considering the emotional consequences or how other people might feel about it. It sounds like a good thing to do, let's do it. This person who's more gut than thought might be, I did this, and then they justify what they're thinking. Well, this is why I did this. It shouldn't be a big deal. Why is it such a big deal to you? So there's the sense of, well, I did it, and I want to, there's a sense of right and wrong on the gut that tends to be very black and white. Because the gut sees things in terms of present time out here. I did this. Oh, I'm sorry, it's like, you're displeased? Well, this is why I did it. Or I did this because it's important. There's a sense of needing to justify the action with either feeling or with thought. Okay. I'm going to put up the 9 different personality styles, and I'll put down the names for you too. And then I'm going to explain how the lines go in this crazy system, because it was developed with mathematics. Not just, oh, boy, this is a nice design. Let's go. Okay. So let's start here. Put the 9 up here. Put the 1 about there. Put the 2 here. 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, and 8. And that's where the 9 different styles come together. Now the names for these, I wish I had handouts for you. This is something that, you know, I came up to teach lapidary this summer. The 1, different. Now the thing is, if you go to the books, different teachers use different names. It's just that everybody sees this system a little differently, and different characters or personas will come out. They basically fall into the same pattern, but sometimes this person is called the perfectionist. I call them the director. Because the favorite tool for these people is this. This is their tool of choice. You. Why do you think you should do that? No, I think that, look, and they'll come and go, that's better. They have a... This tool is always, it's like it's in a holster, and as soon as they need your attention, they go like this. And they get it, and it's like right on the end of this finger. The thing that they're trying to do is, the way they define themselves is hardworking. Okay? What's the primary center? It's the one that they're closest to. It's their gut. Okay. So this person here, let's give an attribute to this. They're very precise people. Their visual acuity is very, it's interesting to watch them when they find, somebody says, can you help me with this problem? They take very little time to go right to the problem, because that's what they do, is they seek out the problems, because problems are chaotic, and I've got to put the chaos in order, because that's my job. Okay, so there's precision, and a little bit of perfectionism if it gets out of control, which just basically means they are harder on themselves than they'll ever be on you. But their expectations of you are very high. But never believe that they're higher than they are for themselves. So if they're working 12 hours a day, it's because they think that it has to be done. It's very difficult to delegate. Because their phrase is, if you want it done right, that's right. Do it. Yeah, so it's a do it thing, but it's like, all right, well, I don't want to even take the time to teach you how to do this because I'm not sure that you can, so I'm better off just doing it myself. Yeah. All right, well, I'll teach you. Come over here. Oh, here, I'll give it to you to do, but bring it back for my approval. Okay, so there's this inability to let go sometimes that causes the style that's number one. I call them styles because I don't think you have a personality. I think you do a personality. So it's a style of behavior. And it's recognizable. And people, we all have these little subtle things that we do all the time, and people go, oh, I know that's you, Roberta, because I recognize you from a distance. I don't even have to see your face. I can just tell by the way you move, and by the inflection in your voice, and by the way that you act, where you are. And that it's you, that it's Roberta. Nobody is one style. Okay, the idea that somebody says, well, you're a this, is incorrect for me. And I really caution people against just pointing a finger. You are a that, or you are a 9, or you are a 6, or you are a 5. It's really not the point of the system. The point of the system is to take that finger and go like this, and figure out which personality style you do most well. Which one do you do easiest and most often? And normally it happens in conflict. Now go around and name the other ones here. Okay, I'll finish the guts in a bit easiest. Okay. Let's go to the 8. The 8 is the warrior. Oops, the dead pen. The 8 is the warrior. Sometimes called the champion. And I'm sorry if using different colors is making these people nervous, but that's okay. If it's making you nervous, it should tell you something. Sometimes I hang things just a little crooked and I watch you start to squirm. Okay, the warrior defines themselves as being powerful. And by powerful, it's an awareness of weakness. The thing that they're most leery of is weakness in themselves. So there's the sense of needing to push against the world. I want to know where my limits are. They live in a very interesting space that's fairly to themselves. But if you break into that space, you're going to encounter them. Clint Eastwood, we talked about yesterday. You know, the idea of Dirty Harry, or Will Penny in the movie Unforgiven. Margaret Houlihan in MASH. There's many characters. Some of the movies that Katharine Hepburn is in, where she's this forceful, get-in-your-face kind of character. That sense of having assertiveness can also be seen as aggressiveness by the less aggressive or assertive styles. So this warrior has a sense of, this is of kind of coming to the defense of the underdog. If somebody's being attacked, these people can be bullies and take advantage of weakness in others, or they can also be the bodyguard, which comes to the defense of the ones that are being attacked. These are not people to get on the wrong side of. But what happens sometimes, and Roberta and I were demonstrating this yesterday, is if somebody pushes, I won't pick on you today, because put your hands up. Okay. I want you to push. Come on from. Okay. So they'll push and push and push until you push back. Now push me. Push me really hard. Now I have to stand up and push against me. Okay. So if I'm pushing, you stand up. Yeah. And tell me your name. You are? Your name?
Sal.
Sal, right? Okay. This is everybody else. Sal. Everybody else. Everybody else. Okay. Now you push on me as hard as you can. And I keep pushing and I keep...
This is hardly fair.
Well, so what? Okay. Do you understand? What happens with the eight is that the eight pushes and pushes and pushes until they find out when you're going to finally push back. And if eventually you say, well, this isn't fair, then the eight goes, if you won't stand up for yourself, how will you ever stand up for me? So the issue for this particular style is trust. We talked about, some people say, this style wants to control. Every single one of these styles wants control. We all want to control over our lives. We all want to know that we're in charge. Hope I didn't hurt you. Okay. So here you've got a big issue of strength. I am strong. Strength is a big issue. And so they'll push themselves to the limit. They like to go right up to know, how far can I go before death slaps me in the face? I don't want to be killed, but I want to know I'm getting close. So there's a sense almost of extremism. And it's physical. Okay, and sometimes it can be corporate, the CEO who says, we're going to take over this company. It's a sense of challenge and adventure that goes with this. But there's also a healthy dose of danger. Does anybody know anybody like this? Have you ever worked for somebody like this? Very strong and good to know. And the funny thing is, somebody described them as something like a marshmallow that's got a little toasty, crusty, burned in the fire outside. But once you get through that shell, they're all mush inside. Primarily gut, secondarily head, which means they first act, then justify the actions. But they're driven by an intense desire inside. They want to be loved. Everybody in the circle wants to be loved. For these two styles, the heart is the least integrated, it's the furthest away. They both feel it. They both have that interior side, but they're reluctant to show it because once it's open, they're vulnerable. Vulnerability is seen as a weakness. So keep it covered, keep it closed. Don't let anybody in, and you won't have to worry about being hurt. So trust becomes a big issue. Wonderful people. We talked yesterday about some examples. Does anybody remember those besides Clint Eastwood? Intermediary. Go ahead, make money. We talked about Archie Bunker. Okay, for all of his roughness and the way that he treated Edith and the way he treated everybody, he was a pretty softy inside. He had love of family was his entire life. But his way of having his space was to sit in his chair, kind of ordering people around, kind of a bossy type. Margaret Houlihan, the same way, in MASH. There's this sense of, when anything comes up that it comes up against what she wants, what does she do? She confronts it openly. She doesn't hold it. Colonel, I'm having a problem. It doesn't matter what he's doing. She's having the problem. She comes in, grabs him by the hat, and says, listen to me. Eights are like that. Champions will do that. This style is called the mediator. Some people call them the peacemaker or peacekeeper. So the nines are kind of like Winnie the Pooh. Go with the flow, don't make waves, let's just keep on trucking. Grateful Dead, okay. This is the person who is very good at understanding the strengths and weaknesses in a situation and creating calm. Somebody pointed out to me once that Gerald Ford really typified this style, because when the country was falling apart and Nixon had, been impeached and all this was happening, Ford just said, well, let's just put Nixon out of the way. I'll pardon Nixon, let's get on with things. There's a sense with the nine that they're not too sure what their own needs are. And if you ask them what they need or what they want, there's all this internal reflection that has to happen before they come out with something. People are very good with nature, tend to be very good with walking in the woods and becoming the woods. They blend in. They're not necessarily very outspoken, but they tend to be more like a campfire than a missile. Or a rifle. Or a searchlight. These people tend to be generally very open and very honest, very sincere. And you think these are feeling states. The trouble is, it's all inside. You don't see it very much. It's just this sense of, I'm okay. And that's their self-identity. If the 8 says, I am strong, and the 1 says, I am hardworking, the 9 says, I am okay. I'm okay, you're okay, we're all okay, okay? And their fear is conflict, because they don't know how to deal with the conflict. Conflict means taking a side. And one reason that the 9 sits sort of at the top of the circle is it kind of rides the fence. It's keeping balance. It's staying on that line and taking an even keel. And if I go slowly, I'm less likely to lose my balance. But if I have to take a side, it throws me off balance. As an example, I was teaching a workshop once, and a person was telling me that they thought they were a 9 because they would go swimming. I said, well, tell me about it. And he said, they'd walk down into the pool. They'd walk down the steps into the water. And they'd get down like this, put their arms in the water, and hold their breath, and wait for all the waves to stop. And feel one with the water. It's just like they disappeared. All that was left was their head sticking out of the water, and the rest of it was just, don't make any waves. And then, of course, an 8 would come by and do a cannonball. and literally shatter the scene. But the 9 would just wait for the 8 to go away. So, in a struggle between this person and this person, who do you think wins?
9.
How many people think the 8's going to win? Why, Dan?
Going to help. Because he's going to be more forward in his opinions, or his or her opinions, than the 9. The 9's would be more likely to just...
And the 9 will say, yes, oh, of course. Mm-hmm. And then the 8 will eventually go away. And who wins? The last person in the room will probably be the 9. The 8 may think, I've won. And the 8's off to the next challenge, and the 9 says, what an idiot. Or they just go, and then later the 8 will come back, remember that fight we had the other day? And the 9 will go, I don't know what you're talking about. So their way of defending themselves is to go kind of self-anesthesia, which is if it gets conflictual, la 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 la, and they just block it out. And they won't remember it. It will never have happened. Very peaceful. Maintain the inner calm. If my self-identity is I'm okay, I have to maintain that. The way I do that is just cover everything up and wait. Okay. Can you give me an example of the 9 besides Gerald Ford or Wayne Group? Do you have a question?
Yeah. The 9 is the closest to centered on gut.
Right.
Yet it's not the one that is the aggressive. It's the 8 or the 1.
That's right.
Why?
Because right now, the 8 is also influenced secondarily by the head. The 1 by the heart. So the 1 has something they want to get done, and they charge it with a feeling. The hardest thing for the 1, the hardest feeling they have to deal with is anger. Because anger is messy. Anger causes problems. The 1 needs to solve problems. I'm putting things in order. They don't go together. What's wrong with this? And then they go, startled. Back together. And it's just the sense of not being able to let go that's not good enough. The 1's thing about not being good enough is driven by a feeling that it can be better. It can be better. It's a desire. Yes.
What if sometimes you're like, you don't want to face a conflict, but then sometimes you do? Like you want to win, or I don't know.
Like for the 9?
Yeah, like sometimes you block it out, but sometimes you don't want to block.
Give me an example.
Okay, say like two people are fighting and you want them to cut it out because it's annoying you. But then sometimes somebody will come up and confront you and you just want to like tell them off and get them out of your face.
Give me an example. Create a scene. Fighting about what? Two people are fighting. About the last chair. There's only one chair left for first setting.
Okay.
Two people want to sit in it.
then I probably, I'd just like say, can I move on?
Are we talking about this person?
I don't know.
Okay.
I'm just gonna.
If we're talking about this person, what's gonna happen? There's one chair left, first sitting, both people want the chair.
They're gonna grab it.
That's right.
Alright. This person wants it.
They'll give it up.
In the person's face.
I don't know.
What would happen with this one? The one says, what?
It's my right?
It's my chair.
It's my chair.
My chair.
They're gonna try and relate to the person, okay? They're closer to the feeling side, so they're gonna say, well, I was here first. It's my chair. They're gonna try and explain it, this person's gonna sit down. They're both driven by their gut, it's dinner time. What does this person do?
Stand there.
Watch.
Watch or watch.
Watch and wait and take the next.
Next and be made.
Wait for the next meal, you guys go ahead. Go ahead, yes.
Now, that gets back to Stan's question. If he is the most action-oriented, that is gut, why would that person just stand back?
Most gut, not action-oriented, most gut. Remember, if the gut becomes too dominant with this person's driven secondarily by their head. They sit down, they justify it. I'm sitting down, I'm hungry. This person's driven by feeling. I feel I ought to be here. This is important. And they pull this out and say, I was here first. This person snaps their finger back. or even just says, well, you can go to the next setting. This person will come up with a reason that they should sit down. This person is being driven by feeling. They might start to get angry. Well, I was here first. So a fight between these two would not be very pretty. But for this person to argue with these two would be more conflictual with the self-identity of being peaceful. Mm-hmm. Gut energy is about being safe. Okay, the 8 does it by being strong, the 1 does it by being right, and the 9 does it by being okay. Okay, this is Winnie the Pooh. Oh, fine, I'll do something else for now. And that's okay with them. They might be a little miffed, but they might not feel the anger till later. And what happens is passive-aggressive.
Yes.
You know what that means?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Anybody have an example?
I'm going to tell you I'm going to do what you want me to do, but when you're not looking, I'm going to blow it up in a way you won't know who did it.
Uh-huh.
That's what you're saying the mediator will do?
Mm-hmm. The mediator will do almost the passive-aggressive if they get upset. The problem is they're not really sure. They start to think about it, they get a feeling about it, they get a think, they think back and forth, it's like a tennis match in their head, and they just watch it. But when they start talking to you, if you ask them, what do you want to do, the first thing they say is the most important. They'll give you a litany of maybe 10 things that would be okay to do, but the first thing they say, and that's the trick to understanding and communicating with the mediators, is to know that the first thing they say is the most important. For example, if I called you up, Peter, and said, Peter, and you're not.
I think I am, by the way. That's why I was curious.
Well, that's okay. If I said, Peter, no, you call Kate. You're the 9, and you call me. And you say, I'd really like to go get some dinner with you. Let's go get pizza. And I say, oh, Peter, that sounds great, but I'd really rather have Chinese. You might say, oh, well, Chinese is okay.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so what I've done is I've said, here's what I want, but your first, even your activity of asking me is a big deal. Because you'll have to spend time doing it. And the important thing to the 9 is what? The meal's important, but it's most important to spend time. That's why the 9 is inviting the other. Otherwise, you might say, I'm having pizza, why don't you come over? Then you get both of those needs met. It's not unusual to find the mediator with a favorite chair to sit in at home, a favorite place to go, a favorite piece in the house that's theirs. It's like their sanctuary. But it's because they're perfectly safe within it. Let's keep moving through the other styles, or we're going to leave one out. Okay, we'll come back. If you have questions as we go.
You better not be the 2.
We'll do that next.
I'm just kidding.
Because of the 2?
They leave themselves out.
They do. Talk about 2s. Let's move into the heart center. Dead people can be thinking about this the whole
time.
Okay. The 2 is commonly called the helper or the caretaker. I call this 2 the caregiver. Because a caretaker takes energy. 2s give it away. This is a person who defines themselves as being helpful. This person says, I'm okay. This person says, I am helpful. Now what does that mean? To be helpful. primarily heart center, okay? Secondarily gut. I keep stressing the centers because if you understand the centers, the rest of it follows very easily. Primarily heart. Secondarily gut. Yes, I.
Well, you're defining yourself by what you do for someone else. And they, and in turn, that tells you who you are.
Yes. Yes. The need here is for appreciation. Mm-hmm. It's also to serve. Okay, service. Altruistic giving is a very wonderful thing to do. But giving in order to receive is very different. Sometimes the caregiver gives so much care to others, they don't take care of themselves. They are the last on their list. My grandmother was a great caregiver. She was the best. Except that her dinner was usually cold because she'd feed the whole family, and then she'd eat in the kitchen by herself because we were already done by the time she came in with food. So we learned to just sit there and wait for her. And we would say, Grandma, we'll serve ourselves. Just sit down and join us. We want your company for dinner. And if she had a problem, she never brought her problems to somebody else that I was aware of. She never came to me and said, I need you to do this for me. It was always, what can I do for you? What can I do for you? And it's like, we would all die if there wasn't a piece of this in all of our families. If our mother or our father didn't have some of this caregiver. And some of this is in all of us. What we're trying to determine tonight, hopefully, is which one of these do you prefer? Which one do you do the most? If a nine, well, let's say this, there's a lot of relationships that are built up between eights and twos. The caregiver, the being helpful, the service oriented. And twos will tend to be like chameleons. They'll become what they want, what they think you want them to be.
Yes.
Because they build the relationship. That's what's important, is that, and it's one-on-one relationship. That's very critical to them. They like big families, but they have an individual relationship with every piece, as opposed to one of the other styles that identifies more with the group. We'll talk about them in a while. But in relationship, the eight says, blah, 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 and the two says, okay, yes, dear. Not because of this business, but because the relationship is so important, they don't want to risk doing anything wrong. And one of the best, when I talk about Archie Bunker here, Edith was here.
Yeah.
You see it a lot in the movies, you see it a lot in the literature, where you have the overwhelming, strong warrior eight going out and doing something and coming back to be nursed by the two. A lot of nurses actually take on this, people who are in this style, take on helping professionals, ministers, nurses, male and female. This isn't limited to gender at all. None of this is gender specific. If you've ever known a woman eight, they have a hard time dealing in our society because they're not accepted. It goes against what our society calls the right position or the right thing for a woman to do. If you saw When Harry Met Sally, here's Sally. Radar O'Reilly comes into this. Being helpful, giving all to the other person, being ready, being available. They are the kings and queens of their homes. That is their domain. They have a very strong ability. And you feel so welcome. Is the door really cold?
No.
You sure I can close it for you? There's a sense, they would see somebody going like this and realize, oh, I can close this. Everybody, you know, and they wouldn't ask everybody at large, they'd go individually. Because what they do is they take a piece of themselves and they give it to you. And they gather your piece and give you their piece. So pretty soon I have individual relationship, if I'm doing two, with everybody in the room. So if we adjourn and some of you don't come back, what happens?
They've lost something.
Yeah, part of me's not coming back. Yeah. Well, do you know what happened to Peter? He didn't come back. And so there's this, what did I do wrong? It's just, there's this sense of almost, oh my gosh, I must have done something wrong in the relationship or he would have come back. And it's a feeling of loss. So when they develop those relationships, they become critical. And there can be a tendency for the twos to become codependent because they will start to enable other people in order to keep the relationship intact, even though maybe unhealthy. Now, it's not always the case, but there is a tendency here, just like there's a tendency here to be overpowering. Learning boundaries is difficult for the two because their membranes are permeable. They allow things to go back and forth. So they sometimes will try to help people who haven't asked for help. Have you ever had that happen? Ever had somebody walk into your life and fix something and you say, that wasn't broken, why did you fix it? Oh, well, I was just trying to be helpful. Oh my God, then what do you do with it? Well, thank you very much. You know, and I've had my wife, Joanne, who's the lovely basket maker downstairs, you all know, is self-bound in this area. And I realized it one day when I came back from a trip to California, and this was before we were married, and she'd come over, and she didn't have any money to buy me something, but she wanted to do something for me, so she cleaned out my garage. And, you know, it was one of those moments where I went out to look for something and I couldn't find it. And I'm one of those people with spatial memory where if I put something down, I remember where it was, but if she moves it 2 inches to the right, I won't find it. She not only cleaned out the garage and cleaned it up, she'd taken things to the and redecorated the bathroom and put in her own colors. And I said, you know, I really appreciate your intent. But the application of the intent has just made me a little crazy, and I wish you'd consult me next time on the color scheme before you redecorate. You got married anyway. It was okay. But the idea of the caregiver is knowing where the boundaries are, because they want to please so much, and remember that the desire is for their idea. They become real at the point of appreciation. Do you really want to make these people sing loudly, give them flowers for no reason? Just say, I love you. That's all. You haven't done anything to deserve it. You haven't had to. I'm giving this to you because you're special. And they'll sing for a month. Also, don't forget your thank you notes. Okay?
Did you give her flowers after she cleaned out your garage?
Cleaned out your
garage. Well, let's put it this way, she took me to dinner to apologize, but I ended up paying. She says, let's go to dinner. So we went to dinner, and she says, I don't have my wallet. It was fine. It was okay. And you know what's funny? 3 months later, I didn't even remember if it was in those boxes, so I thought, well, I decided I have a mind. What can I do? I'm primarily here, so I didn't worry about it.
Now you're empowering the caregivers there are. Huh? Those of us who fear having people clean our garages, you've just empowered them. A pox on you.
Hey, the terrible scourge on me, I guess. Don't clean garages for people unless you're asked. That was the problem, is if she had called me and said, and guess where it was? I know it was in California, I came down for Easter. But if they ask, they say, would you mind if I cleaned your garage? That's a different thing, because that's still being helpful, but it's getting the permission that it's okay, the boundary's been established. This is your space, can I come into it? Sometimes with the twos, primarily feeling, secondarily gut, so they feel something needs to be done, feel it strong that this would be a good thing when they do it, as opposed to the one that says, I'm gonna do this because I feel strongly. Here is, I feel strongly, so I will do this. It's a decision of the heart, less of the head. She didn't think about how I would react to it. She just thought what a wonderful thing would be to do this. She hates it when I give this example, so please don't mention it. So, Joanne, tell me a garage story. She should come back and say, I hate that story. Strong emotions. Okay. Three. What are you sort of three? Threes identify themselves as being successful. These are performers. These are people who are very charismatic. They make excellent leaders because there's something about the way they carry themselves that people feel inclined to follow them. It's like they know where they're going. But they usually only know where they're going based on what other people are reflecting them. They can't be a leader without a follower. So they really are good coaches. They pull people together for goals. And their lives are set up around day timers, schedules, cell phones, ways of connecting to other people so that they can accomplish what they want to accomplish. Hopefully, the goals of them and the other people will be relatively the same. But somebody who's captain of the football team, okay, as opposed to the line, you know, the guy who's in a position, this guy might be the quarterback, the star. There's this thing about standing out in front of other people because what they crave is recognition. Now, here is appreciation. here's recognition. So they will, the idea of being successful is you can't be, if you're successful to yourself, that's one thing. But be successful to other people, and you have to have outward signs of that success so they will recognize it. Applause. Right, that's recognition. So if the project, if they're working on a project, say, project manager, they're doing an installation of, let's say, I don't know, they're building a building, and they're pulling it all together, and their whole goal is to get this thing open by a certain date. And say halfway through the project, the design phase, the budget gets scrapped. There's no more money. The project has failed. Sometimes this person can take it on that they have failed. And they have a hard time separating the project from them, or the task, or the goal. It can be having a dinner party. It could be, we're going to go to Holden. By God, all this is going to happen. And suddenly there's an emergency and the money's gone, so there's a failure. And they tend to identify with the failure and say, oh, I'm a failure. And then all that leadership quality goes like this. Because they are unable to sometimes separate themselves from the problem. And what they can do is change the failure into a success and pretend that they've succeeded when they've really failed. There's almost an inability to accept failure. And failure and mistakes are part of life. You learn by making mistakes. But these people, because they don't allow themselves to make mistakes, there's a certain similarity here. But this person's really hard on themselves. They'll go back and try to fix it. By God, they don't fail. They don't. The idea of failure here is that it's not right. Here, it's that it's me. There's something wrong with me. Here, these people fix the process. These people have to fix themselves. Salesmen can come into this category.
Hi, I'm going to sell you a new car today.
What? It's been a little while. What would you like to buy? What would you like to buy today? And you come in thinking you want to buy a $2,000 red Volkswagen. Well, I know that as a salesman, the more car you buy, the more money I get for commission. And I said, geez, that red Volkswagen, that's a good little car for $6,000. But you know what? For just $2,000 more, I can get you one with air conditioning. Now, it's still red, but... So I start, my goal is commission. Your goal is to get a car. But if I can convince and persuade you that this is the car to have, then I've just met my goal, which is to sell you a car, but to increase my commission. So remember, the whole idea here is build the trust, build the relationship, and then make the goal. Somebody told me once with threes, it's learn the rules, play to win. If you've ever watched a parent try to teach their children to play checkers, and the child starts to win, this is the person that will finally say, hey, I gotta turn my game around here. I gotta get ahead. Kids start to beat me. I can't be beat by a kid. There's a sense of not winning. It's not okay to lose. Okay, John F. Kennedy had a real charismatic way of going about things. Lee Iacocca identified he was cross-eyed. And he pulled that thing out of the tube and said, we're going to make a success of this company. Anybody who follows in, Tom Cruise plays really great roles. Do you see Top Gun?
Yeah.
Green Man. He's the Wheeler dealer. This is the guy who's going to make it happen. He's not going to just be a Top Gun pilot. He's going to be the best pilot. And he's a show-off. And there's this sense of cowboy diplomacy. Captain Kirk is here. I am the captain of the Enterprise. Isn't that a great thing to be? He would be the captain of anything if he didn't have a crew. But when something goes wrong, he takes responsibility for that entire situation. Jean-Luc Picard is one here. Real easy going, keep the peace. And I read somewhere that if Captain Picard and Captain Kirk were having a discussion about who was best captain of the Enterprise, Picard would say, let's sit down and talk about this, and Kirk would just shoot him. it's a different way of performing. This is a sit back and let's see how things go, and then move slowly, and this is move quickly based on past performance. Very strong leadership. If you've had a coach in this area, you've probably won a lot of games because it's the coach's team.
Okay. That's right.
And the idea here is once you write this down, it's success. I am successful. Sometimes called administrators, I don't like that very much, it's kind of a cool term, but I like performing. we'll just call it that for now. Questions on the three before we move on to the four? I'm trying to get through this in 10 minutes. Okay, for the four, it's primarily heart center. Now, what happens, we've talked about the three, but the thing is here, primarily heart, a lot of heart. So that the other two are fairly balanced as far as their influence. And that's one thing about the nine, the three, and the six, is they tend to take on most of the characteristics of just that center. It's harder for them to balance. For the four, the definition, I call these people, I call them the artistes. Artist wasn't good enough. Wasn't special enough. So the artiste, I didn't make it E different, is I am unique. Or I am special. These are folks that can't, that, or being common is a bad thing. That's the threat, is that they're gonna disappear. So they need to stand out somehow. They need to be recognized, but it's internal recognition that they're looking for. It's the sense of, I know that I'm special. So if they're invited to a formal dinner, and everybody's dressed in tuxedos and black evening gowns, everybody looks pretty much the same. This is the person that will wear diamond-studded sandals, because it allows them to stand out. Or maybe they've got the diamond earrings on. Something that allows them to stand out in the crowd. Now, in social groups, like especially with maybe people in school that you know, there might be a group of people, a few years ago, the big thing was grunge, you know, dressing up and being kind of slovenly looking. And even within that group, which stood apart from the regular group, there might be a four or an artiste in that group. How do you think they would dress? Maybe like a preppy. Maybe like somebody that wanted to stand out. Even within that group, they have to stand out. Yeah, John?
You were saying the ball thing before. Mm-hmm. Like, if everybody was dressed in black, would that person also want to dress in, like, neon yellow so just they should show out?
Quite
show
possibly. Out. There's another style that would do that, but for different reasons. But yeah, they could. Typically, they'll do it more elegantly. Okay. And sometimes, if they really need attention, they'll dress up and be really just out all over. But the problem here is because of the intense emotion. Now remember, primarily heart, secondary head. What are they furthest from? Their expressiveness. So a lot of the time, they're having all of this emotional turmoil. It's all going like this. They're having all these feelings. They start to imagine fantasies that will allow them to play out those feelings. And all you see is, and that's all that bubbles to the surface. But these people tend to have the ability to dive down very deeply into their feelings and bring back all kinds of treasures the rest of us would never think about. Most of us live in an emotional scale that goes from happy or happy happier to about sad. You know, we go back and forth and we live our lives in this kind of spectrum, unless it's a traumatic event. But those are ordinary emotions, right? So what happens to the people who are doing the fourth style? They have to be exuberant and entirely joyfully happy, or they go way down and they're morose and depressed. And life is not what it's like. So there's this roller coaster of emotions that they ride on, but for the rest of us who are here, we don't know when we see them which way they're headed. And so sometimes, if they're really depressed, because of the extreme emotional intensity, they start to feel dead. Because it makes them feel real because they're in the extreme emotional scale, like ultraviolet, infrared. We're down here in visible light, but these people go beyond what we would call regular emotional bounds. It's really an amazing thing to watch. But it gets scary when they go low because we want to help them, but it's like, I don't know if I want to step into that. When I first started studying the Enneagram, I thought, well, maybe I'm here because I like the music and I like art and I like poetry and I do all these things. And then I sat with a group of people who do this stuff. And the conversation turned into, oh, that's terrible that your dog died yesterday, but you know, my mother came down with liver cancer, and she's, oh, well, my father lost a leg. I mean, it's like they kept trying to outdo themselves, and they were getting more and more emotional, and they started crying, and they were concerned. You know, these people are on the road to ruin. And I tried to get into that wire, and I couldn't bring myself to do it. And I realized I loved them very much, but I had to thank them for their time and move on. And they were perfect. And it was funny. The more they cried, the more they started laughing. I was in the wrong time. It was like the sadder they got, the happier they were. And so they were pulling each other up and down. And it was just like watching a tug of war where one person would get pulled into the mud and then pulling the other person into the mud. And they were just having a grand time with it. But the idea is that the extreme of emotion is the thing to watch for. And if this is something that you experience, this isn't bad. It's just a different way of experiencing the world. They tend to see colors very vividly. Very vividly. They hear sounds very, very sensitive hearing for the most part. They're just very acutely aware of the input that's coming in. But it all goes deep down inside. Comments, you know, this person says, that shirt just doesn't go with those pants. This person might take that as like, oh, and just completely draw it in inside. Or it's worse. And the four goes, what? What's wrong? And it's like this, but the relationship here is primarily interior, relating to others with the need to succeed, and relating to others. So there's more of an extroverted with the world with the two. They want to reach out and help others. This person wants to be seen, but it's inside. All this stuff's being driven on the inside. Okay, fives. They're going into the head center now. Everybody put on your thinking caps. So fives identify themselves as being knowledgeable. They call them the sage, or I call them the professor. Some people call them the sages, but these people like to profess. And they are knowledgeable, or knowing. They think they're knowing, but sometimes they're just knowledgeable. What's the difference? Wisdom and knowledge are not the same. Unfortunately, this is Yoda. Okay. Has all this incredible knowledge, 700 years of understanding, and he hardly talks at all. But when he does, it's like this nugget of wisdom, which is so amazing. And he's a puppet, and we believe him. He's like, oh my God, he's like, oh my God. Okay. Robin Williams in Awakenings as the professor. They tend to do a lot of research, and it's again, they think and then they feel. So they feel very strongly about what they think. The knowledge belongs to them. These people are they're observers, they're natural observers, a lot like the nines. Okay, some people confuse these two, but the reason is why. The nines inspect and observes why. For safety. Well, if I act too soon, I might do something, you know, I'll be regret later. It's like this sense of, Or sometimes they're just not paying attention at all. They just look like they're observing. The five is constantly accumulating information from every source. And one of the things that they really do well is read. But when they read, I don't know if you guys are old enough to know about card catalogs and libraries where you pull the shelves out and there's all these cards inside. Yeah. Okay.
Well, I can hold them.
Yeah, like here. That's right. Okay. So one back in, I had a guy in a workshop telling me how he was reading, and he said, "Well, I read, and then I start thinking about all the things it relates to. A lot of categorizing going on, a lot of ways of putting things together so it makes sense to them. So they open a book, and it's like when they open the book, they go into a library, and they start opening up. Okay, this subject relates to this subject, and this relates to this, and that kind of relates to that, and this corresponds to this. And pretty soon they have about 35 files open. And then their loving, responsible, loving, caregiving spouse or partner comes in and says, honey, would you like some coffee? And what they have to do is they have to close the book and shut down all these files. No, thank you, I'm fine. Open the book, open the files back. Then what happens? Are you sure? It's no trouble. Put all the files down. No, really, I'm fine. I don't want anything. I'm perfectly happy with my book. Well, it'll only take 5 minutes. Here, let me get you something comfortable. Put your feet up. At that point, the five closes the book, closes all their files, and goes into the bathroom and closes the door. The thing is that these people consider everything from here down extremes. It's just ways of getting more data, or doing research, or finding out. But the way to do it is to take the world apart, dissect it, understand it, put it back together. They tend to have piles of books open to various things, because this relates to this, which relates to that. So there's an ongoing intellectual project almost all the time. Brilliant people. philosophers, examples besides Yoda, William F. Buckley, Carl Sagan.
Yeah.
Can you think of anybody that's really like, I don't know about Bill Nye the Science Guy. He's pretty nice. He's pretty wild, but I think he's more over here. He's not that kind of scientist. People who are very quiet, and when they do speak, they tend to have a lot of knowledge, but they won't. If you ask them about what they know, it'll tell you a lot. But if you ask them questions they don't know, they don't say anything. They say, I'll get back to you on that. And they run down to the library and read everything. And they come back and give you the definitive answer. It's like, I had one guy tell me, he says, oh yes, I have a lot of answers. An answer is free, but the answer is going to cost you. Tend to be kind of miserly with their energy too, as far as once you tell them something, it belongs to them. Even in secret, you say, I got a secret I want to tell you. They go, okay. You tell them, and it's theirs. They can do what they want with it. It's not that they want to betray your trust. It's just that now it's their knowledge. And then you might find in a book someday. You know, something. But it belongs to them. They can use it any way they want to. But they also feel like, well, sometimes they're underfed. Sometimes you're very thin people. Because what's important is getting information. Oh, I'll eat when I have time. So the diets may not always be right. Unless they're nutritionists, okay. And then you go that way. Okay, it's 6:20. I got about 5 more minutes. We'll try to zip through the 6 and 7. I just, the word I use for the 6 is the orphan. Okay, some people call them facilitators. But the thing with the 6 is that they define themselves by the groups that they're in. Now, it's relational, but not like the heart center. The 6 relates primarily through how they perceive the group to be. What are the needs of the group? Frank Burns and Mash really does this style. The authority for the 6 comes from someplace outside of them. So they tend to get thoughts and juggle them and keep them going all the time. Where the 5 will write something down in a journal and put it away and it's done, it's been cataloged. The 6 keeps everything right in front of them all the time. They're seen by other people as perhaps being paranoid, nervous, looking around all the time. What I find them to be is more alert. Almost everything that's coming in around them, they take in all the data, but rather than decide right away, they look for consensus. They try to find out what the group would like to do. Where I made the example earlier, are you cold? Should I shut the door? And I'm doing the 2 thing. I would say, is everybody feeling a little cold? And they get this consensus, and then they might close the door. Maybe the 6 is feeling cold, but rather than saying, I'm cold, I'm going to shut the door, the 6 says, is anybody else cold in here? And if everybody says no, then the 6 would rather suffer with the cold than upset the group. Okay. So there's this sense of needing to reach out and touch everybody. Reach out and touch someone is all about 2s and 6s. The big difference here is that they're both very interested in the group and what's happening. Except that the 2 does it one-on-one and the 6 does it collectively. Mm-hmm. This is the board. This is the collective. Okay. Well, people who want to be part of it anyway. Examples of 6s might be Luke Skywalker, who tries to get his power from, Obi-Wan Kenobi, then he tries to get it from Yoda. He just doesn't believe it's inside of him, but it's finally there. He finally realizes it. Hopefully by the end of the 3rd movie. It's been a long time. Woody Allen. Some of the way they carry themselves, 6s, they just seem scared. Piglet and Winnie the Pooh. Okay, if Eeyore's down here, well, don't worry about me. I'm just my birthday. It doesn't really matter. Piglet knows a lot. He's probably the smartest character in the Pooh books. Owl's down here, lives in his tree, doesn't really communicate much with people. But Piglet is really nervous around other animals. But he's Pooh's best friend. Pooh is the peacemaker. He's the leader. Pooh says, everything's okay, Piglet. It will be fine. And Piglet holds Pooh's hand and feels really good. But when Piglet has to stand on his own, he's nervous about what to do next because there's so many things that he could do next. What if he does the wrong thing? So there's a nervousness about being wrong. So the big issue here is loyalty. The 6 says, I am loyal. I'm loyal to my group, to the people I'm with. As long as they believe in what the group is doing. But as soon as the 6 runs counter to what the group is doing, the 6 will find another group. But sometimes they'll go along with the group even though it's wrong. And a lot of people have said that the Nazi movement in Germany in World War II, there was a lot of this 6 stuff going on because people were afraid to act out differently from the group. It's worth a lot of research. There's stuff going on. People have said, oh, Hitler was a 6. I don't know. I mean, the guy was, well, there was some definite agenda going on, but never met the name. Hitler seemed more, I don't know, people say, oh, he was a 6 because he needed to be part of the group, but he was almost like a leader without leadership. He needed somebody to get him on the right path, and he took a different path, and people followed. On the seven is the adventurer. And by the adventurer, that means these people make all kinds of plans. They want to do all kinds of things. They're good at a lot. They're generalists. Their hardest thing to do is follow through. You ever see The Sound of Music?
Yeah.
Okay, Julie Andrews as Maria von Trapp is this seven, right? The whole first part of the movie, what is she doing at the introduction? She's up dancing in the mountains and singing to the trees, and the brook is alive, and she's just this butterfly wandering through the meadows. And then the bell rings for Vespers. And she's like, oh my God! And she races down, and she's running through the courtyard, and these three nuns, the Mother Superior and the Attendant, are standing there, and Maria goes by, oh, hello, and they just shake their heads. How do you take a cloud and pin it down? Okay. Eventually, Maria gets kicked out of the alley, and the door slams behind her. There's a sound, and a sound. If Maria was here, she'd jump off the cliff. Life has come to an end. But no, she picks up her guitar, starts singing, I've got confidence in sunshine. She's running through the streets of Salford. She has ugly clothes on, but it doesn't matter. This is the tinker of the A-ground. I can do anything. I can eat anything. But then they do it. They go, I didn't really like that. So there's a sense of, think about it. It's not as bad as the optimists. And then do it. Oh, maybe it wasn't such a good thing to do. I don't feel good after this. I ate something I probably shouldn't have eaten. It looks interesting, I'll eat it, but it doesn't seem right. So the sevens are characterized by their optimism, by their willingness to say yes. No is a very difficult word for these people. I know, because this is where I am. This is why I think it. It causes problems sometimes, because the big threat here is pain. But the threat for the six is deviance, being different from the group. The threat for the seven is pain, emotional pain, or actually physical pain. So they tend to go into things very lightheartedly, and then it starts to get difficult, and they go, no, maybe I'll do something else. So this remains unfinished. And sevens can plot their lives by the unfinished projects that they've started and not completed, because when it comes time to do the work, they really need to have somebody like this in their lives who's willing to work to the end. These people are very good starters. If you're doing brainstorming sessions, or you need ideas in class, or different kinds of things in a group, these are the folks that come up with ideas. You go, how in the world did you think of that? Because they're constantly putting things together that have never been put together before. So to hear, if I am joyful, so anything that keeps me from feeling joyful is a threat. So I've got to change it, or get rid of it, or change, do something different. Some is good, more is better. They can be gluttons. Yes?
You got them all down. Just before Vespers, where do you put Jesus?
In the middle. Jesus had the ability to use any one of the styles as best fit the situation, because he was balanced. His centers did the right work. What happens typically with us is that our dominant center does the work of the other centers. Head centers can't do gut center energy very well. So if I'm a seven, and I'm trying to create peace somewhere, I might interrupt. I might go, well, maybe we should do something different. I'll try to change activity rather than just sit still. It's something that has to be learned. We're going to run out the Vespers now, but thank you for coming tonight.
Thanks, Greg.
I'll pull that over.